Kevin mentioned in the announcements both this morning and this evening about the caroling. We've been doing that for a lot of years, and fortunately we've been able to go back to the same places most every year, and at least get to see some of the same people, actually some of the same people we've seen many, many years. And I would like, as he did, just to encourage, if you've never gone, it's such a fun time. And we just eat lunch on the 16th. We'll have lunch here at the church building in the fellowship hall. You can just run out and get something or bring something to eat. And then we leave here about 12:30 or so, and we have three stops. They're all within about a mile and a half of here. And we're done about 3 o'clock. So if you can make it, it's a lot of fun. And it's always a good time. What's the largest number of people you've ever shared Thanksgiving dinner with? The largest number of people you've ever had Thanksgiving dinner with? Anywhere. It doesn't have to necessarily be at your house, but just anywhere. Yes, 20 people, that's a pretty good number. Did you host, or was it at someone else's house, or your mom? Okay, all righty. Can anybody? Yes. 27. I know you guys host a lot. Did you host that one, or Thanksgiving's a big time with the Cole family? Yeah, 27 people. Fit everybody in somehow. Yep, Willie. Depending on how you look at it. Okay. You may end up winning, unless the Beerleys eat with everybody at Knott's Berry Farm, so they might beat us all. But I don't think it's their own private meal. I'm not sure. You know, when we first moved to Kenya, the first year, first Thanksgiving we were there, it was kind of at the height of the numbers of American missionaries from the Churches of Christ in Kenya. I think there were somewhere between 35 and 40 families across the country. That was kind of the peak, and then it went down. Just as works matured there and not as many were needed. But that first year, most of the missionaries from the country came into Nairobi. We housed those of us who were living in Nairobi, put up a couple of families each in our homes, and then we had a Thanksgiving. I thought I might win here. Not that it was a contest, but I think Willie's going to have the biggest. But about 130, 140 people came together for that Thanksgiving. And, Thanksgiving is one of those times when hospitality just seems to be kind of a natural. Maybe it's one of those times where we're just very much more prone to it. It's certainly a very fitting time for showing hospitality or for enjoying the hospitality of someone else. Tonight, as we just kind of go a little bit further with what we were talking about this morning, I thought rather than delving into additional information, I don't know that that's what we need, although we will be getting into some more information next week. Going in some different directions. I thought it might be good for us just tonight to reflect a little bit and to discuss about our own experience and practice of hospitality, especially as it relates within the church. This morning I told a story about, and I cannot remember, this is one of those age things I get, I cannot remember whose story I told today. So if any of you know whose story I told about the family and the Model T, I don't remember. I was wondering if it was Wendell Pierce. That's kind of my memory, that it was Wendell Pierce. If anybody remembers that story about traveling in the Model T and knocking on the door, I'm pretty sure it was Wendell, but I didn't want to just say that today if it wasn't right. Have any of you had an experience on that level at some time in the past, that level of hospitality from strangers? Yes. Okay, another very interesting experience of being asked to stay the night kind of out in the middle of nowhere and somebody caring enough. Kevin? Wow. Sure. Well, that's really that, so actually not even being on the road, but hearing it and then turning around to find her and then not only taking care of the problem, but then inviting her into their home. That's pretty amazing. That's a pretty amazing story of hospitality. We'll take one more, Sharon. How about that? Oh, that's pretty good. Giving your home address out when people are asking for a recommendation for a place to go eat. That's pretty hospitable. What do you think? Oh, go ahead. Sorry, I don't want to. This is the last one. Jasmine has the last word. Go ahead. Okay. So you grew up in a home where your mom was quite hospitable in bringing people in and doing things for them. Yeah, that can. Yeah. Somewhere along the way in the next week or two, I'd like to talk about the blessings and the lives of children who grow up in hospitable homes. If you grow up with a hospitable parent, it can make an amazing impact on your life, not only from what they do, but sometimes from the interactions or the relationships that you build with the people that get invited into your home. And we'll hopefully we'll have time for that here in a week. This is a couple of weeks, maybe three, but 2 to 3 weeks. We'll just see how things go. It's just something that I've definitely been thinking about and wanted to share with biblically. Do you think overall that there was a higher level of hospitality 40, 50, 60 years ago than today? Is that a general assumption we could make? No, I'm certainly there are hospitable people today. There are people who go beyond the call of duty, but probably we would guess that years ago. Why do you think? What was it, even in our own country then, that caused people perhaps to be more open and hospitable? What are some of the things? I mean, some of the factors at that point, Jaylen? Okay, life wasn't as busy. There were a lot of moms staying at home and okay, more time to prepare. Willie? Sure. Okay. And what you're talking about too, and I'm certainly not disparaging Southern hospitality. I mean, those two words really seem to go together, culturally speaking. But you do have there kind of a specific situation where Christian people are coming in or other people coming in with children to an area, and it maybe people are prepared to be accepting. Maybe that's part of that, but definitely, and so we're certainly not saying that there aren't such people. I think we have hospitality in our own congregation, and many, many instances of it too. So, but I guess just in the kind of the general societal kind of view, but that, it is good when you have those kinds of experiences. Sharon? Sure. Would you agree? Inviting strangers into your home seems to be maybe a little bit more dangerous than it was 60 or 70 years ago. Yeah, I would think so. Jesse? Wait a minute now. I don't know if you can answer this question or not. Okay. Okay, so there might have been a very different kind of family. I think we're all very much aware of the changing family dynamics over the last 50 or 60 years in our country, and certainly on the cultural society level, that it would be fair to say that families were probably stronger. Not that there aren't strong families today, but just generally across the board, that family played much more of a role. Eric? Okay. Not as the commuter culture being spread out, having distances to drive to work, that sort of thing. And something that kind of is a part of that too is that urban life is different still than rural life. It's different living on a farm, even today, than it is living in the middle of Los Angeles. It's just different. The anonymity that exists in an urban area, the estrangement, the lack of community often that exists in an urban area. And you know, I was thinking about if it was Wendell as a little boy, in those days as well, everyone recognized that there was a need to open up your homes to the people traveling through, because there weren't places to go and stay. There weren't, the road from wherever he was living to wherever he was going, somewhere in Kansas, it wasn't like there was a McDonald's and a Motel 6 at every exit. There weren't exits. There were little, dirt roads. And I think there was just a different level of expectation. I mean, we could go into all sorts of things that had happened to our culture. I mean, diversity can be a very positive thing in a culture. But diversity also sometimes breeds ignorance or fear when people are different than you are and you're not maybe sure about other people. There was much more of a homogeneous worldview and culture 60 years ago in the United States than there is today. We were pretty much the same. Not that there weren't, I mean, these are such broad statements, as if there, there weren't any ethnic groups or things or whatsoever 60, 70 years ago. Of course there were, but culturally there was much more of a similarities than the kind of diversity that exists today. And the busyness, the isolation, someone has mentioned, and probably here, about the how our lives change when we started putting doors into our houses inside our garages. So that when you come home, you push the button, you pull in, you close, you push the button, you get out and you walk into your house, and you don't even walk across your yard where you might actually see a neighbor. I mean, there's so many little things like that that diminish community. Violence, fear, there are all sorts of things that take place. And when you think about, I was thinking about, okay, how's the church fared in all of this? And I think although we probably struggle with the same issues and the same fears and concerns, I would truly hope, and I can only look at this from within the church, because that's where I've always been. So it's hard for me to step out and see what it would be outside. But I think that we do have concerns and commitments toward hospitality that perhaps some people might not have who don't live a life of faith. So certainly we may still suffer some of the same societal and cultural shifts that have taken place and have to grapple with that, but deep down we still do know of the importance of hospitality. This morning we spent a little bit of time defining it. What are the components of hospitality? When you hear the word, when you hear Paul say, practice hospitality, or the Hebrew writers tell us in Hebrews 13 not to forget to show hospitality to strangers, or Peter using basically the same words. What comes to your mind when you hear those terms, when you hear hospitality? What are some of the components of it? How would you define it as far as how we are expected to practice it? Mike? Okay. So availability, and then a willingness to share whatever the kind of resources are needed. And availability is certainly, I mean, that's not available. Nothing's going to happen. Sure. 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 So a willingness to communicate and to talk and to befriend someone. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we looked at several examples even in the scriptures this morning of how hospitality exists on a variety of levels, from the sharing of time together to reaching out to people a little bit more on the fringes, such as we, I mean, in, like the orphans and so forth, people who have special needs. But then Jesus, of course, talks about a pretty radical form of hospitality. We're not going to get into this tonight, but I hope to maybe next week. Jesus is at somebody's house for dinner. So just imagine that you're the one that invited Jesus over for dinner. And first of all, he's noticed how when everybody came in, they were pretty clued in about to where they decided to sit and the seats of honor and that sort of thing, so that they could establish the pecking order at this dinner. So first of all, Jesus deals with that and tells them that when you come to a dinner like that, you should take the most humble seat first. But then he says to the host in Luke chapter 14, 12, just imagine you're the host. When you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers, or relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. And we know that Jesus often ate with his friends and that he cherished those times. And we have several times where Jesus is sharing meals with people that he loves and that he is close to. But here he reminds us of this kind of radical nature of hospitality that reaches, I'll tell you what, that's far beyond my comfort zone, just to tell you. I mean, those are pretty radical kinds of words. And if you're like me, you're kind of scratching your head thinking, how in the world you start to apply that in our day and in our time and with all the concerns and the fears that we might have. I'm reading that tonight just to kind of plant that seed. We'll come back to it here perhaps next Sunday. But it does point out that that hospitality is this way of life that is that stems from having an open heart to people and to their needs, that is willing to put the needs of other people ahead of yourself, because it's costly. Because in hospitality, it's that sharing on so many different levels. It's the sharing of your time, the sharing of your privacy. I mean, some of us, you like your privacy. You know, that's important to us. We like to have those times where we're alone, where we're not bombarded, where somebody's not necessarily, you know, knocking on the door, and yet hospitality says, no, you throw the door open. You welcome people. You make a gift of that privacy in the name of serving somebody else whose need you put ahead of your own. And then there's the resources, the space, the time, the money, and it is definitely, a sharing of ourselves. Let me ask you, what reasons might we offer to excuse ourselves from being hospitable? What excuses or reasons or what fears might we have? And you can answer this question not listing perhaps your excuses, but, you know, if someone were to make an excuse, what kind of excuse? None of us would ever do this, of course, but you know those people who make excuses. What kind of excuses do people come up with to in some way excuse themselves? And especially just starting out with hospitality within the family, just on that level. I mean, there's a lot of fears when we get a little further down the road. Mike? Yeah? Yeah, That's, you probably thought that, some of us have probably thought that. The home's too small, not enough room. Connie? Oh, I'm sorry, it's Jessica. I see. I was wondering how you were doing that. But oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, because sometimes, you know, there are certain realities. I mean, it's, that would be a difficult place to have 20 people come over, you know. But we can be hospitable too with one or two as well. But I'm glad the ladies, yeah, I was really wishing I had all the notes from all the lessons that were given that weekend. It would really have helped me this week. But okay, that might really help. Yeah, that would be good. Okay, so the, again, it gets down to the size, but yet someone helped you find a way around that one. Kevin, and then Eric. Okay. Yeah, the gift, that's, you know, that's an excuse that we can use for a variety of things. Well, I don't share the gospel with people because I don't have the gift of evangelism. I'm so thankful for the people who have the gift of evangelism who just do that naturally. And, you know, there are some things, there definitely are people that have the gift of evangelism. But that doesn't mean that, that doesn't excuse any of us from sharing our faith in Christ. There are people who have a gift for hospitality. We know these people. You know, we've been around them. We've been blessed by them in our life, throughout our lives. There are some people who just are such servants when it comes to extending hospitality. But that again doesn't excuse us from practicing hospitality, even if it isn't necessarily the gift. Eric, and then.
But then with your gifting, there is, oh, I need to have a relationship with each other.
Sure. Yeah, we have those. We have the ability to make excuses at any stage along the way. Ellen? Well, you're getting to the actual reasons for it, not the excuses, but yeah, and you know what? We are busy. Is there anybody here who's not busy? I mean, we could all probably say we're busy, but still, there is that level of at times of selfishness or maybe sometimes fears. I saw a hand of yes, Ginger. Yeah, that's hospitality. And the reason that story has stuck with Ellen and I so much is because I can't make up any excuses anymore. Because we've got actual bowls. You know, we've got enough bowls that we could give 20 people a bowl of soup. And even if we didn't, I wouldn't have an excuse anymore. And that was such an eye-opening thing because so many times the excuses are in the area of entertaining. You know, things aren't good enough, things aren't nice enough, I don't have the kind of dishes that I need, I don't have this or I don't have that, it sounds kind of strange to say, but it is a form of self-centeredness. It's focusing on us and how are we gonna look and how is it gonna come across what we're doing, rather than thinking, how can I still bless these people or this person regardless of what I may or may not have? Yes, sir. Okay. Out of spite. People don't invite me over. Why should I invite them over? Yeah. Oh, boy. That's, Yeah, I mean that's probably as good an excuse as any. And yes, Jesse. Okay, they don't know you? Well, I'm not sure what you meant by that, Ellen, but sometimes we don't know what to say. We don't know how to start a conversation. We don't. These people are going to come over. We're going to have dinner with these people. We don't know them. What are we going to say? What if we don't get along? How are we going to keep the conversation going? What if it just stops? Boy, that typically doesn't happen though. But those are sometimes we just have those fears. It's not that we're trying to get out of something. Sometimes we're honestly concerned about how an event's going to go or how conversations are going to go or not go. Or we wonder about that. What would be some suggestions, some practical suggestions? If someone said, I want to be more hospitable in the coming year than I have been, or I just want to continue to be hospitable. What are some practical suggestions that we could come up with to help people when it comes, at least in our hospitality within the body, within the family? Any ideas on just some? And one of them I have written down, Jess, is a cookbook with simple recipes, by the way. So I may take that cookbook from you, because sometimes it is a matter of what you're going to be able to serve. Mike? Okay. All right. So to team up with someone else, to work with someone, especially if you don't have a location, or maybe if you just want someone to help, to kind of share that, if that's what it needs to get over a fear, absolutely. Okay. If you didn't hear that, Mike says he brings everybody over. He picks up the couch cushion, lets them see the popcorn, then puts it down. And I wish our popcorn was, we have Kathy's dog Zoe comes over and eats our popcorn for us that we've left around. So before we have anybody over, we want to make sure Zoe comes by and eats the popcorn from around the chair that I don't know who drops it, but there's a lot of popcorn in that house. Suggestions, Jim, and then Sharon. Okay, start off with smaller numbers. Start off with a smaller number and then work up as you build a little bit of. Okay, Sharon? Okay. Have a potluck if you're about, yeah, if you're not feeling confident in preparing a meal, have people share. When we start up our Thursday night Bible study every fall when it starts back, we always. Our first Thursday back when Mike actually comes now. Actually, Mike comes all the time now because he's retiring. But he used to have to go to bed like at 7 o'clock, so he couldn't make it. But we'd always have a dinner, and people bring things and share. Everybody shares and brings things, and it's a really good way to do it. It sure is. Eric? Sure. Pilgrim Heart. Okay, so sometimes it's a matter of acting, behaving a certain way, and the feelings, they get stirred in the right direction. So often we want to wait until we feel like something, and then we'll act. But oftentimes the feelings come by doing what's right, by having the right behavior. One thing that you can always do is set a time. Now, I grew up, in a Christian home, and I think we went out to eat on Sundays once every 8 months, probably. We ate at home every Sunday. Mom had a roast or something like that, and almost most Sundays, someone was there at our house. That was just a way of life. And that's one thing Ellen and I have talked about, you know, because we love to go out, and a lot of times we go out to eat with folks here, and that's great. That's wonderful. That's a wonderful thing to do, and you can kind of even do it on the spur of the moment when you haven't even planned, and go out and have a great time together. But Ellen and I have talked about that. You know, we need to get back to the, because we always ate at home, you know, years ago. Ellen and I did. And getting back to taking Sunday. Sunday's, let me just say, Sunday's a good time to practice hospitality in the church family, because we're all together Sunday morning, and it's real easy then either to go to a restaurant, but to invite someone into your home on a Sunday as well and have that time. You might make a list of people that just kind of start kind of making out a list of people that you would like to come to your home, and be thinking about people, maybe be thinking too about people who might not get a lot of invitations, who it may have been a while since they've been invited into someone's home for dinner. Sometimes that happens. It's, and I don't know how we would know that, but just be thinking about different, sometimes even different different groups of people within our family. To invite all of the young people over for a meal or for an evening. See, we're talking about meals. It can be for a game night. It can be, you know, for any number of things. You know, having an evening, you know, just thinking about different segments of folks in our congregation that might enjoy being together, that sort of thing. But just, you know, maybe making a list and being very thoughtful about this and putting it in our schedules, choosing the time and putting it in the schedule. If for you it's going to be once every 2 months or once a month or once every 2 weeks, get the calendar out, start planning that, start looking for those dates, start thinking about who you can have over for dessert or for whatever. Some of the ladies this morning, my wife told me, we're talking about having, you know, it's like, how long has it been since we've had a singing on a Sunday night? We just need to get together in someone's home and have a singing. And, you know, that those are the kinds of things that we can all also do that, and that's usually potluck that Sharon mentioned, where everybody shares in the responsibility. And part of the way I think that we can prepare is to perhaps be thinking about things to talk about with people. The kinds of questions that we might ask to get to know people, where people are from, when they became believers in Christ, when they were baptized, where kind of what their journey of faith has been, what their work, what kind of work they've done, the places they've lived, just sharing life experiences. Just be thinking about the kinds of things that you can talk about, that you can ask about. And I think of that story that we mentioned this morning about the young couple who just decided they were going to have everybody over a period of time. They were going to invite. And I think, wouldn't that be an amazing blessing? It might take more than a year with as many people as we have in our congregation, but wouldn't it be amazing to have every single person in the body of Christ, in the family, in your home, in the course of a year, 18 months, or something like that, just to really have time together and to get to know one another. I'd like for you to be thinking about the blessings, and we'll talk about this next time. I'd like you to be thinking about the blessings of hospitality. The blessings you've received as a recipient of hospitality, and the blessings that you've received as one who has extended hospitality. Because there are blessings on both sides of this experience. Some of the greatest blessings in hospitality, you know, kind of in keeping with Jesus' words, it's more blessed to give than receive. Some of the greatest blessings of hospitality come to the one who extends it. The amazing things that can happen in your life when you're open to people, and especially to your brothers and sisters in Christ. I just want to encourage us to be thinking about this, and not just to be thinking about this, but to be looking for ways to act on it. And I know I'm speaking to some people who are regularly hospitable, who have people in their homes all the time, and you don't need me today to preach to you about this because you are such models of it, and we thank God for the people who do that. But let me just encourage us all. We'll close with the passage from Romans 12 again. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honor one another above yourselves. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. And as I said this morning, that word practice there means go for it. Put your effort into it. Put your heart into it. Make this a priority in your life. Strive, pursue for this kind of openness. And may we as a church, maybe in this coming year, just really work on reviving that spirit of relationship within the body and to really encourage and strengthen each other. I think that would be a blessing to every single one of us. And tonight we extend an invitation, as we do each time we meet. If there's anyone here tonight in need of the hospitality of God through Jesus Christ, to be welcomed through the blood of Christ into the family of God, we invite you to be obedient to the gospel of Christ, to put him on in baptism and begin your life in the Lord. If there's anyone in our family tonight with a need, with a physical need, a spiritual need, a prayer request that you have, please let us know as we stand and as we sing.